This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He had time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst ever!
Puts it up the right sideline.
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS championship.
Hello and welcome to the Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, assistant managing editor here at TexasFootball.com, Dave Campbell's Texas Football, and the managing editor of TexasBasketball.com, and Dave Campbell's Texas Basketball, here in studio with our college football insider, Mike Craven. Mike, what is up, man?
Doing pretty good. I just realized my title is much shorter than yours.
Well, I have two titles.
That's a long amount of things. It's like, man, graduate of Texas State, Manor Tech High School.
Just keep rolling off the resume, basically. Yeah. Just start reading my resume on air.
Yeah.
One that's, I guess, slightly also a longer title than yours, associate producer of Texan Live, Mallory Hartley. Mallory, how are you doing?
Good to be here, as always.
Yeah, so I kind of appreciate the smaller titles because, like, they just know what to do. Like, there's no, like, all right, so listen, with me and Mallory, it's kind of like, all right, listen, we got this, we kind of do this as well. Mike Craven is like, that's Mike Craven, the college guy.
That's the college guy. That's exactly what it is, yeah.
My first stint at Dave Campbell's, I convinced them to just make me the senior writer.
I do remember that. Because John Clayton.
Yeah, because we didn't care about titles and stuff. And I was like, can I be the senior writer? I was like 27 years old. And like, sure, okay. You know, so maybe I need to get that back.
Senior college insider?
Yeah.
There you go.
I gave myself a title last semester, or I guess last year. Yeah. So I was the partner services coordinator, but I also edited a lot, so I said like video content producer slash
sure.
video I was go. Like it was in my email signature. I was like, I don't know if this is okay, but I'm just gonna add it because who's gonna tell me now?
Adam sees it, like, that sounds right.
Forgiveness,
I know.
Not permission. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Forgiveness, not permission. Anyway, so if you're watching this, we're not here in studio right now. We're actually at Conference Media, Conference USA Media Day. If you're watching,
we'll
this
do a live
Wednesday
show too.
I was about to say we've done a lot of pre-recorded. Trust me, we will get back to live shows eventually. We just had a lot of things going on, coaching
and
school.
All Wednesday.
All on
Wednesday. Yeah.
Like, it's an amazing weird thing.
Because we had everybody was on vacation, and then Big 12 Media Day and then coaching school and then our Conference USA Media Day. I knock on wood, I don't think we have anything the next week. We'll see. I don't know. Something will probably come up. Come up where I have to record, but then again, we won't be available Tuesday. Won't get into that, but there is something down the line that me and Mike Craven will be at next Tuesday. So I don't know. If something comes up, we just won't have a show next week. Anyway, we have a couple of headlines here before we talk to our guest for this week, which is The Athletic's Max Olson. But we have some headlines, of course, and we're going to play a weekly game, which I like to call, What Did Mike Craven Do to Piss Off Twitter? So we'll get into that when we get into actually, we'll just jump right into this. Speaking of coaching school, we were at a Texas Tech social, Mike Craven, for a couple of minutes, and everybody, we kind of hung around and saw Joey McGuire. If you get an invite from Joey McGuire, you got to go, right?
You got to go.
Doesn't matter what.
That's true.
And so, but after that social, he had to make kind of a quick trip back to Lubbock. And we later found out why, because he said it was something big. That's all he hinted at us, was something big for the program. Well, the Matador Club announced that they would be signing every single Texas Tech player to an NIL deal worth $25,000. 100 players for Texas Tech football.
That's absurd.
Mike Craven, where's this money been at for our whole lives for Texas Tech?
Yeah. I think we're starting to see how much they didn't like Matt Wells. You know what I mean? Like,
very
that's
true,
a good point.
It's like that program went into like dormancy for a while,
yes.
Like hibernation for a little while. And now that Joey's there and kind of going around shaking hands, kissing babies, doing the Joey McGuire thing, like, they've remembered that oil is from West Texas, and
sure,
they have a lot of money, and it is a place that has 40,000 students at it right now. You know, it's a huge alumni base, a lot to pull from. I think this is tremendous, and it's a statement of intent from Texas Tech that we're not going anywhere,
mm-hmm,
right? Like, conference realignment can happen. All these things can happen. Y'all can act like the Big 12 is dead, but look what we're doing, right? This is $2.5 million.
Yeah.
Per season, right? And right now it's 1 year. I was talking to some guys at the Matador Club organization. They assume this is going to keep growing, You know, like, this isn't going to be a one-year thing. It may be 30,000, maybe 35, it may be 40. They want to get it to men's basketball and baseball pretty soon. Eventually, they see this thing as every single player at Texas Tech, women's, men's, pay sport, not pay sport, is a part of this organization. I think we start seeing copycats of this everywhere. And it's a great you know, recruiting tool for Joey McGuire. It's a great recruiting tool for the guys on the team.
Yeah.
Right? In the era of the transfer portal, why are you leaving now?
Right.
You know, if you got 25 grand plus your scholarship, now all of a sudden you're at market value. And people like me who have always been arguing for players to get paid, you know, weren't arguing for them to get paid millions of dollars.
Right. No.
It was just for them to just get paid market value the way the rest of us do. And if you add 25K onto the scholarship and the housing and all that kind of stuff, now they got pocket money. Now they can go to the movies. Now they can go on vacation. Now they can do all the other things that we all want to do. And so, yeah, I think this is really big for Texas Tech, and it's one of those things that in 4 or 5 years, this is the norm.
Yeah. I was about to say, like, as anybody who makes, who works for a living, right? $25,000 is, you know, is not life-changing money
before taxes.
Before taxes, is not life-changing money in terms if you're looking at it as a salary, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you're just a kid who just wants the basic necessities, right? If you walk up to anybody and just hand them $25,000, right? Not over the course of a year, but just like, here. That's changing money, right? That's immediately changes what you don't have to worry about. Oh, can I go home for the break? Can I do this? Can I do that? So much is taken off your plate.
Can my parents come to my game?
Right, exactly. Can you afford to bring them? Yeah, you can obviously just afford to bring them.
Does
my brother
get new clothes before his sixth grade school year?
Exactly.
Like, things like that
parents
that don't
that
think
can't
about.
Take PTO. Oh, don't worry about it. Yeah, miss that day, Mom. You're fine. I got you, right? This is what we're talking about when it comes to these types of NIL deals, when it comes to just, again, this is more than pocket change. I don't want to like actually act like it's a small sum of money. This is a large sum of money. But overall, we were just wanting these guys to have like quality of life money, right? And obviously on top of that, if you're somebody like a Taj Brooks that can maybe make some more money off his name, image, and likeness, then it turns into something else when you're adding on to that. And so that's overall, this is the spirit of what we wanted, right? And when you're at a place like Texas Tech, which clearly has money, now you're motivated to give it to the players, right? They just announced the End Zone Complex, which is great. I'm not saying, you know, players love good facilities. You know, if you want to be a top program, you should absolutely invest in facilities. But also, we see the spaceships that are at LSU and Oregon and all that. And so for so many years, that was the height of the investment in players, right? It was like, cool, you got a hot tub in your locker room. And it's like, all right, what happens when you leave?
Like, right. It's like if your boss came to you and was like, yeah, no raises this year, but we're getting new chairs.
Right, exactly. And so all the players are watching this technology just like flare up around them. It's like, yeah, you got a PS5 now in the clubhouse. It's like, cool, I don't have a PS5 in my apartment. Like, I'm not going to be at the clubhouse all the time. So just things like that. This isn't millions of dollars. This isn't everybody making Bryce Young money, but it's just giving them that baseline saying, hey, we got you.
And right. It provides some equity.
Easily.
Right? If you're the backup guard, you're making as much as the quarterback, right, on this deal.
Sure, like right.
You
just
can go
right
get
now.
Extra money and all this kind of stuff. But it provides a little equity, and it keeps Texas Tech from being in that recruiting NIL game.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, where
yes.
It's like, is there going to be a guy who shows up to campus that's making more than like the starting left tackle? Well, now everybody's at 25K. That's your base kind of starting salary. And so, yeah, I think it's a very smart move. It's a good move. And it's one that in 5 years we look back on and we're like, oh, well, duh, that's how everybody's going to do it.
Right. As I mentioned before, we are at Conference USA Media Day. July 25th, a Monday, they announced the Conference USA projected polls from the media. And I don't think too surprisingly, UTSA picked to win. They're picked to go back to back. North Texas came in at fifth, UTEP at sixth, and Rice at 10th. Mike Craven, what was your takeaway? Were you surprised at all that UTSA was picked again? There are some pieces to replace on this team.
Yeah, I think UTSA, UAB are kind of the front runners there. So that was pretty obvious. I kind of thought it'd be a little bit closer. 14 first place votes for UTSA, 8 for UAB. Western Kentucky still third, despite losing all that offensive production, I think kind of shows kind of where Conference USA is. There's a big drop, in my opinion, after UTSA and UAB. The thing I find most fascinating is the North Texas UTEP. at 5-6, right? Like, I think those two teams are pretty even on paper. Mm-hmm. They play week zero out in El Paso. Like, there's just going to be – it's hard. You know, I don't want to sit here and act like we're going to learn a lot from an August 27th game.
Right.
But we're going to learn a lot. We're going to learn a decent amount from this August 27th
just
game.
Just between those two teams,
right,
yeah.
Just, yeah, between those two teams and what that middle of the pack is for Conference USA, like where that level is. So, yeah, pretty much everything that I thought. I think Rice is going to be better than 10th. But I get why people wouldn't predict that until we see it on the field.
Yeah. I think one thing that was interesting to me, I mean, kind of looking at outside the Texas schools, I mean, I don't know what anybody can say about Western Kentucky right now. Right? You lose
Nothing
your offensive
is
coordinator.
Certain.
You lose your quarterback. You lose your best receiver. Like, you know, obviously Jared Daigle comes in, so he's going to be the guy now there. So, like, obviously they have FBS caliber talent, potentially probably that, like, lower Power 5 caliber talent even potentially in him. But I see that third place finish and I'm like, oh, they were good. They were good last year. So I'm just going to kind of slot them that they'll figure it out this year. I don't know. I don't know how you can say that they're third and like UTEP is sixth and have any confidence in any of that 3-6. Like you mentioned, that middle. And then you want to add Charlotte, Middle Tennessee in there. I don't know. And what's potentially Sonny Covey could do at La Tech. I don't know anything from like that 3-9 range.
Yeah, it really is like in tiers, right?
Sure,
there's like the top two teams, and there's like 3-8, then there's 9-11.
Yeah.
Just kind of in that, or maybe even 8-11 with Middle Tennessee being in there. So, I think like what we saw with UTEP last year, the nice thing about Conference USA is you can make a move up. You can go from 4 wins to 8 wins pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so we'll see if Rice is able to make a UTEP similar jump this year. Because just from talking to that staff, they were all at coaching school, right? They're confident, you know, and everybody feels pretty good this year. Like, you rarely do you get a coach that's like, yeah, we're going to stink.
Right.
But usually they'll pull some punches and be like, well, we don't know. Yeah. We're going to have to see some things. Yeah. Some things are going to break this way. We're going to have to stay healthy. Rice, like, no, we're good, guys.
Yeah.
Like, we're pretty good. And so we'll see if that translates onto the field in the fall.
Another poll that came out last week was the SEC media poll, and A&M picked second in the West, unsurprisingly behind Alabama. But I'm kind of wondering, are you picking A&M over Arkansas and Ole Miss right now?
I'm not. Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine is not. That, like, if you can tell me at the end of the year Texas A&M finishes second in the West, I'm not too shocked.
Sure.
I mean, they got the talent to do it.
But heading in,
I need to see that passing game.
Let's put it this way. So the SEC does something different than others. They actually have media members pick an SEC champion.
Right.
You had Alabama gets 158 votes. Georgia picks 18. South Carolina 3. Vanderbilt 1. Sure, whatever. A&M 1. Like, there was no votes for Arkansas or Ole Miss, which, again, if you talk about winning the offseason, hard to go against Ole Miss. If you talk about trajectory, well, Arkansas is pretty damn
well.
Or
even LSU, too.
Or even LSU. They've done some things, right? Ryan Kelly's gotten
They've picked up a couple of good recruits recently,
exactly.
too.
So, like, I don't know what to expect from A&M.
I think that recruiting class has really clouded some people's judgment.
Yes.
Like, they signed the best recruiting class of all time. Look how good things are going at A&M. And I agree with that to an extent.
Yeah.
Just not in 2022.
No. Like, it's going to take some time.
2023, 2024, Texas A&M may win the SEC, much less finish second in the West. Like, that's going to be a really good football team. But for me, I need to see what that passing game is like before I pick them to be second in the West. You add in the Ania Smith off the field stuff. We'll see how that goes. I don't know who their quarterback is. Their best wide receiver is a true freshman.
Yeah.
You know, like, and that was true in the spring. Mm-hmm. He was their best wide receiver as soon as he stepped onto campus, and he should have still been in high school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So until that's true, until, like, they have weapons and a quarterback that's consistent, I don't know how you pick them over an Arkansas team that just continuously blows people away and overperforms what expectations are. Like, K.J. Jefferson's a legit quarterback. Like, that dude's good. Arkansas defense is really good. That linebacker core is good.
Malik Hornsby we've known about for a while. Right. Like, is he next in line to be their next guy after quarterback kind of limited them last year?
Jalen Catalan, Bumper Pool, like those guys. That defense is loaded.
Drew
and
Sanders.
Yeah, Drew Sanders. I forgot that Drew Sanders is there at Arkansas now. So, yeah, I think Arkansas is being slept on, and if it was me, I'd have them second in the West.
So that'll do it for the media polls. We got Media Days that's going on right now. As we're recording, Big Ten Media Days going on, which I assume is just the Commissioner Milley rocking on the grave of the Pac-12 or something. But, like I said, we'll be
the idea of a Midwesterner Milley rocking. You know,
I need that footage.
Anyway, we'll be providing you coverage with Conference USA Media Day over the next day, and I'm sure Craven will have some stuff up his sleeve as well when we get done. Anyway, we are the Republic of Football here on DaveCampbellsFootball.com. If you're watching us right now, you're obviously familiar with our streaming, right? We are on Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, on TexFootball.com, YouTube, Facebook as well. And you can find us here every week at 2 p.m. When the season starts, keep this in mind. When the season starts, we will still be here at 2 p.m. every Wednesday live streaming. But we will also be adding our usual Sunday recaps. Those will just be via podcast, via Spotify, Apple. Those will not be live, of course, because Craven will be on the road. I'll be on the road. Mallory will be on the road randomly. And so, like, we'll kind of provide that to you as it comes, as you've been listening to us in the past. Be sure to subscribe at TexFootball.com and everywhere you get your podcasts. As I mentioned in the pre-show, or I guess the first segment, we have our special guest on, one that I was really excited about from The Athletic, Max Olson. I'm just going to say it, behind the scenes, we've had some technical issues. So, Max, what's it like to have you on again? Thanks for being with us.
It is good to be back on the show for a third time in the past 3 minutes. Excited to get this going. And, yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, for the listeners at home, this is the beauty of recorded streaming instead of being live. So,
all good.
Yeah, as I mentioned 3 times before already, we were all at Big 12 Media Day. And we all got to see, I've focused on pronouncing his name right that I forgot his name. Brett Yormark.
Yormark,
yes, yep. Yormark. Okay, I focused so much on pronouncing his name correctly that I literally forgot his name before I was about to say it. Anyway, it was our first impressions of him overall as Big 12 commissioner. Max, what were your overall takeaways from Big 12 Media Days and from hearing Brett Yormark speak as commissioner for the first time?
Yeah, you know, I reported out a story when the Big 12 hired Brett Yormark, and my reaction was the same as even a lot of ADs in the conference, of like having to Google his name and be like, who is that, when that news came out that he was going to be the choice. You know, we reported out a story about, you know, kind of his background in pro sports over, you know, 30 plus years, and his career as a CEO, and kind of his rise up the ladder, and just, you know, the when you talk to folks around the conference, the message was really that he blew people away in the interviews, just with his energy, his enthusiasm, with his big ideas, with the directions that he wanted to take the Big 12 in, and the conference in general, that just hadn't been done before. And I think you saw all that kind of on display at Media Days and kind of his first public appearance. This is a guy that, you know, has in declaring the Big 12 is open for business, he clearly is going to go about this his own way. And they made a hire that's probably the opposite of Bob Boolsby in a lot of ways, because they feel like that's where college sports is heading. It's increasingly professionalized, and they feel like they need someone with a pro sports background from, you know, working in NASCAR, from working in NBA organizations and running the Nets, and everything he did in Brooklyn. You know, they feel like they need someone to kind of hold their hand through all that, who has a different kind of experience than, you know, a lot of these career, you know, AD types did. And so, I think that the enthusiasm is on display. You know, some of the buzzwords he threw out about making the, you know, Big 12 younger and hipper, I'm fascinated to see what that actually looks like. But, you know, clearly Brett Yormark is bringing a lot of energy, a lot of juice to this. And, obviously, steps in a time when there's an opportunity potentially to raid the Pac-12. And I think he's a guy that's pretty excited about that opportunity.
Max, Mike Craven here. I'm curious, are you optimistic or pessimistic that the Big 12 can remain an important part of the national football landscape? Just with the conference realignment, with Yormark coming on, like, what are your just kind of overall thoughts on how they keep up, I suppose?
Yeah, it's pretty clear where this is all heading. You know, that first of all, obviously money is driving all the decisions right now. And, you know, because of the new TV deals coming up, the SEC and the Big Ten are going to run away from the other three conferences. That's just clear. That's just where this is going. And so, you know, the Big 12 is you know, brought in a new commissioner at a time when they need to figure out a way to keep up by any means. And that's not just in moving forward without Texas and Oklahoma and just sort of the hit that you take on that. But then how do they just bottom line, maximize revenue, maximize the annual distribution to their members? Because it really is all about that to a lot of folks. And so, you know, the four new members, I think, are probably the best they could have done in terms of adding new schools. There's not, you know, unless you get Notre Dame or something, like, there's not an Oklahoma or a Texas out there that you can get that makes the Big 12 what it was. But You know, right now, I think you have to kind of look at their challenge here as not so much, you know, what I don't think there's a bunch of moves you can make that suddenly you're making as much money as the Big Ten. But right now, I think the rat race here is how do you get ahead of the ACC and the Pac-12? And that's where, you know, this opportunity to take four or six schools from the Pac-12, that's kind of the motivation there, I think, is to, you know, basically it's a eat or be eaten time right now. And you have to kind of embrace that and try to make those moves. And whether he can pull that off, I'm really not sure as of today. But, you know, that's where the struggle is for the Big 12 is how can you be, you know, you've got to figure out a way to make as much money as at least those two leagues and stay competitive with them.
If you're the Big 12, how do you go about this Texas-Oklahoma departure with these new schools coming in next year? Do you try to expedite it up and get them out of here by 2023 so you can just kind of be, you know, your full-fledged conference you're going to be for the rest of time, or, you know, rest of time, whatever that means in college football these days? Or do you, as the Big 12, try to keep Texas and Oklahoma in it as long as, you know, their contract says until they pay up? If you're the Big 12, kind of how do you go about that split?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. That's where the leadership change, I think, is an interesting dynamic and all that, too, because, you know, Bob Bowlesby's position was pretty well established that, you know, to him, the cost was much more than $80 million or whatever the associated, you know, buyout costs are, because there is the grant of rights. And they have looked into it. They've had expensive lawyers, like, look it over for them and everything, and they trust that it is ironclad and it would hold up if there was any, you know, suits or anything like that. And so, you know, they really believe that they've got Texas and Oklahoma locked in until 2025. And so they have no really motivation to budge on that, you know, certainly their revenue distribution was really good this year and will keep going up, especially with those schools in the conference. And so it would take the cost would be pretty extreme to be willing to let them go. Now, we don't really know where Oklahoma and Texas stand on this. They've intentionally been really silent about their intentions on, you know, when they want to leave and you know, are they going to give notice at the end of this year and try and, you know, make that change in 23 or 24. We don't totally kind of know what their end game is here, but I thought that the comments from Yormark at Media Days were curious, because he said, you know, in trying to make these deals, he looks for a win-win situation. Obviously, the win-win here would be the Big 12 getting as much money as possible from them and Texas and Oklahoma getting out as soon as they want. Now, to me, like, I think you probably it's probably not just as simple as those guys sitting across from each other at a table and haggling over a number. I think probably in some ways with all this is kind of interconnected. And I feel like I've talked to some folks who believe maybe there's like a way that ESPN intervenes in all this and kind of makes the money right for everybody. Like could a third party like that kind of step in and help make that happen? I'd be curious to see, because ESPN would be motivated to get them over to the SEC in time for that TV contract, and there's stuff that they need to work out with LHN and all that. So I don't know if it's as simple as just, you know, we've given our notice and we're out of here. And we'll pay whatever we got to pay. I think it's going to be a really interesting process going forward here, and hard to predict like kind of when they would get out. I don't think they're going to be in the SEC next year, but you know, with a change in commissioners, maybe it's a very different conversation now.
When we do get to that time when Oklahoma and Texas get out of the Big 12, who do you kind of see, or which teams, maybe not just one, but two or three teams, kind of emerge as, you know, kind of the power brokers of that new look Big 12 with the power vacuum kind of taking Texas and Oklahoma out of there?
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty fun league. And I think the parity is like going to be pretty crazy because it's like when you take, like you guys know from a recruiting standpoint, Texas and Oklahoma are the only schools in the Big 12 that recruit at a top 10 level and are even capable of recruiting at a top 10 level, if we're being honest here. Mm-hmm. And so it's almost like everybody in the new Big 12 is like kind of playing by the same salary cap, you know, like everyone is going to, I mean, there's going to be some that recruit better than others, but generally speaking, these are all programs that need to win on evaluation and development and really good coaching and stability. And so, you know, like I think Oklahoma State obviously is like well-positioned overall in terms of their investment and the, you know, what Mike Gundy has done over his long tenure there. Now, he's not going to coach there forever. And, you know, what's kind of the succession plan after that, obviously, is a question. You're seeing right now Texas Tech is really wanting to invest as much as they can in this opportunity, feeling like, yeah, we can kind of rally everybody around Joey McGuire and spend a ton of money. And, you know, the NIL program they're doing, I think, is going to get a lot of players' attention. And you see them trying to make a push here. I think Baylor's obviously super well positioned, and for what they've done over the last decade with three different head coaches kind of proves that they can kind of get it done no matter what it looks like. But I think really the four new schools coming in, like, okay, a decade from now, wouldn't you say it's like pretty possible that Cincinnati and Houston and UCF and BYU are, you know, maybe among those five or six most successful programs in the Big 12 over the next decade? Like, I think that's really possible. Like, I think when you take those programs and you give them more money and a bigger platform and bigger games and stuff, like, as we've seen with TCU in the Big 12 or Utah in the Pac-12 or any other example, like, I think you have a chance there to really kind of level up. And I think some of these schools are already recruiting at as good a level as Big 12 programs. So with that boost of being in that conference, like, I think it's definitely, like, is it possible Houston's one of the most powerful Big 12 programs 5-10 years from now? Like, I think that's totally possible.
Yeah, I agree with 100%. I think there is this 10-year outlook where Houston and Cincinnati are dominating the Big 12, and it's like, who let that mouse in the house, you know, type right. of situation. Just a few quick ones before you let you go. Who do you think wins the SEC first, Texas or Texas A&M?
Oh my goodness, that is a trap. That is a good one. Man. Well, you know, it's funny because we don't really know like how the schedules are going to really work when Texas is in the SEC, and kind of does that make things easier or harder? Right now, obviously, it's really hard to climb up the ladder in the SEC West and get it done. I would. My gosh.
Man, I stumped him.
I think today I would take A&M, but I think that – I don't know. I think that you could kind of see – you could kind of see both programs as well as their recruiting over these past, you know, year – or these past two cycles, really. You know, there's still a lot they got to figure out. So, I think A&M more likely – and maybe that becomes a little bit easier if they're going to kind of more pod scheduling or whatever going forward. But, man, that is – like, do you guys think that one of them will get it done by the end of the decade?
Yeah, here's the thing is I –
because, like, Saban will be gone at some point, right?
Sure, right.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's just a fact. So, like, there's – at some point in time, that door opens for somebody.
Because here's my thing. Like, A&M has the head start because yes. they've been the SEC for longer. What I worry right. about for A&M is this a 400-meter dash where they're just in lane four and Texas is in lane one, and sure. by the time we get to the third curve, that start is gone, right? Does right. it only take Texas two or 3 years to really catch up on that?
Credit to Texas for doing this, but they're recruiting like an SEC team, mm-hmm. right? They're building the trenches. They get Sarkisian, right? They're getting an offense that's more friendly to that. We see the Big 12 kind of going outside of Texas, kind of reverting, right? Going defensive, right? You get Dave Aranda. You got Texas looked at Gary Patterson as somebody who knows that I coached against that conference. I think they've been preparing for the past year or so for the SEC move. So I don't know if A&M's going to have necessarily that big of a gap on them. You know, they go and get Quinn Ewers, right? Obviously, the SEC, to win the SEC, I know last year was an anomaly, but you need a quarterback, right? They go try and get that quarterback. I think that's a good point about A&M's gap kind of being a little bit shorter, I think, than we may realize.
It's a fun.
Do you guys think that Jimbo and Sark are both coaching at those schools 5 years from now?
Ooh,
that's a good question.
I think it's more likely that Sark is,
because that
Jimbo,
stability
to be
piece is like really? Got to be kind of the huge piece of like, can you actually climb that ladder? You know, yeah. like if can Texas actually break the cycle of, you know, firing a guy after 3-4 years because right. you recruited really well and you kind of built up all this hype and then you didn't deliver on it. Like, at least with Jimbo, you've got the long-term contract and he's got all the leverage in that, obviously. But yeah. like, I guess there's maybe a little bit more of a bet that Jimbo's going to outlast Sark, I guess, would be my thinking today. But that could yeah. totally change.
100%. Craven, I see your point on Jimbo, because if he has a couple more 8-9 win seasons, right, it starts to become the Kevin Sumlin thing.
When he has no buying, he can leave whenever he wants,
exactly.
right? So he could get bored and get a different job.
I will say with
to.
Texas, though, I think there is a very realistic possibility that they just look south and say, we have a guy in the university system. that if UTSA has another season like last year in the next decade, which is possible, they just say, why isn't that guy coaching us?
Yeah, I mean, we could get into a whole podcast on like why Jeff Traylor, you know,
I think that's gonna I don't want to say that's gonna hurt Sark, but that's something that I could see hurting Sark eventually if they just see a guy recruiting Texas kids, doing it well, winning in the university system, saying, well, we're just basically reinvesting in our university if we pay the buyout for him.
I'm just excited that we get to have these and Texas A&M are going to be back in the same pool swimming again, and so we don't have to just do this on Twitter all the time. Max, just kind of include you into our podcast there. But
no, trust me, on that topic we can go another hour.
Before we get you out of here, just another really easy one just like that. Who do you think has more success at their school, Sonny Dykes at TCU or Joey McGuire at Texas Tech?
Oh, easy questions today.
Oh, my God. Wow. I mean, this is the Dave Campbell Texas Football Podcast, so I can't legally besmirch Joey McGuire on this, can I? I mean, I can't do that.
Well, you could, but he'll come to our office and, like, show up.
He'll give us.
Well, look, I mean, as you guys have seen over the past week, like, with the Brian Carrington cactus stuff, like, there's a little more juice to that rivalry than there was a year or two ago, you know? It's pretty fun now, especially in going head-to-head on guys and recruiting in the state and all that. Like, and who's going to have more success? I mean, I think TCU is set up really well in the new Big 12 if they can kind of develop and retain, because I think they're pretty well established in this state now. I think it's more challenging at Texas Tech, but that doesn't mean I think that it's going to be like, it doesn't mean I think that they can't get it done there. I think that's probably the right guy. I love the staff that he's put together there, and he's got to figure out a way to hold on to those guys or replace those guys when he loses them, because he's got some really, really bright young coaches there who've got really bright futures. And so that part of it's going to be huge. Sonny Dykes made some changes on his own staff and taking this job. I don't know if I can pick one today. Like, I think it is just objectively harder to do it at Texas Tech. So I think I would lean TCU, but man, the way that everyone's kind of pulling in the same direction at Tech right now, I know that they don't have that same kind of recent history of success, but they're pretty serious now about what's going on in Lubbock. And, within a couple of years here, like, yeah, it's harder to get to, but I mean, I think when kids get there in the future, they're going to be pretty impressed by what's going on there. So I think I would lean TCU, but I love what Tech is doing right now.
Okay. And then last one is 2026. Is Dave Aranda still the head coach of the Baylor Bears?
This is the hard thing with Dave Aranda when he was at LSU. Like, it was kind of hard to tell, like, where's he trying to get to? Is
exactly.
He trying to be a head coach? What's the move for him? And, you know, even last year with I'm sure he heard from quite a few schools about their jobs and probably some of the biggest openings out there. I think he is going to sustain success at Baylor. I think he's going to get more of those phone calls, especially from, you know, I know that maybe some people would take the, you know, that would maybe take the demeanor and personality and think it's a little different than everybody else. And I think it's different in a great way.
Yep.
I could definitely see him being a guy that stays at Baylor for the long haul, because he's just wired it a little different than that. Mm-hmm. Not to say he's not an ambitious guy, but I mean, what are the jobs out there that he would want to run too? I think that, especially when you come from that experience at LSU, you can see like kind of how quickly, if it's going wrong, how quickly people can kind of turn on you and fire you and stuff like that. So like, I think if you got a good thing going there, just like it was for Matt Rhule, I mean, really hard to walk away from it. And it's got to be kind of that dream job you've always, you know, kind of wanted. So I think Baylor's going to have an easier time holding on to Aranda. But, you know, as we saw in this last cycle, like, you never would expect that Oklahoma would open up. You never would expect that Notre Dame would open. I mean, you just never know which of these jobs kind of come along here. So I think Baylor's going to be able to hold on to him, but you really don't know, you know, what's his ambition in terms of what does he think is the best job out there.
All righty, sir. We really appreciate the time. Thanks for being a good sport on some of those.
Hey, absolutely. Anytime, guys.
Right, there's Max Olson. You can read his work at The Athletic. You can follow him on Twitter, Max_Olson. That's Olson with two O's. For Texas fans trying to Holler at him for saying that A&M won the SEC first. No, Max is great. I'm glad that he was able to have some fun with some of the rapid fire questions there. I kind of agree. I agree with a lot of what he said. I do want to hint on before we get to our last topic. There was a reason why teams in the Big 12 were terrified of Houston getting to the Big 12. Do you remember in 2011 when it was like, oh, is this the year, right? When Tom Herman got them going, it was like, is this the year where they make their pitch to the Big 12? And the Big 12 was like, no. Like they were like, absolutely not. Because they never had the Houston, A&M, obviously Texas, Baylor, Tech, TCU, they had the Houston market to themselves. They had to worry about LSU coming in eventually. But as far as the Big 12 went, they didn't have anybody to deal with in the Houston market. Now you get the flagship school of Houston getting the same amount of money.
With Fertitta.
Yeah,
with a guy who's got money.
Yeah, exactly. And now, like, obviously now it was kind of a last-ditch effort, right? They needed somebody. They needed kind of a new co-flagship with all of them, right? I don't think anybody's going to necessarily stand out as the Texas or as a Texas or Oklahoma, but they needed somebody to kind of collectively share the burden with. So they finally just hit the emergency glass and said, let's bring Houston in. That is fascinating. When you give Houston the same amount of money as Tech and Baylor, what happens?
Who knows?
Right? Yeah, I think he's right. I think there is this timeline 10 years from now where we look at the Big 12 and go, well, Cincinnati's number one, Houston's number two, UCF's number three, BYU's right there. You know, like I really can see that. I think Tech, TCU, Baylor have something to say about that.
Sure.
And you know, if like the last question, if Aranda stays there throughout, I mean, I'm betting on wherever Dave Aranda is. You know, I've kind of arrived at that point in my opinions. But yeah, I mean I think those markets that they're bringing in, those teams and programs that they're bringing in, once they have that money and infrastructure of a Big 12 program, can be right there with all those guys, because we don't talk about Ohio enough,
right,
in terms of like football
recruiting. Sure. Yep.
Like they're right there. You know, I think as Texans we kind of like, we Texas and everybody else, right?
Yeah.
Even California, Florida get moved in there. But in terms of like non like huge, it's Georgia and Ohio are the best places for high school football outside of those top three. They're going to be good.
Look at the colleges. You got Ohio State, obviously, as the top. You got Cincinnati. Ohio's consistently been one of the best mid majors of the last couple of years. Youngstown State has consistently been FCS power. Like, Ohio, you can absolutely
half
make
that
a living.
West Virginia roster is Ohio.
Right, exactly. You know, you can absolutely make a living recruiting the state of Ohio. Yeah. So, all right, in the beginning, I mentioned we're going to play a weekly segment. I don't know, it might be weekly at this point, called What Did Mike Craven Do to Piss Off Twitter? Well, this week, we're doing the Texas 12 rankings. We're ranking position groups, coaches, right? Kind of as kind of like a power rankings-ish, but kind of like a snapshot, right? Like as of right now, this is the rankings for blank. Well, we decided to do quarterback room. The reason why we did quarterback rooms is because there's so much up in the air right now with certain starting quarterbacks that you can't just name one guy. Obviously, you can kind of pencil in some people right now, but that could change week two, whatever. So we decided to go quarterback rooms. Well, I don't know if some people realized that was our line of thinking, because
they did.
We had some
angry fans in the
this
comments.
This might have been one of the most engaged posts that we've had in a couple, in a while. I think this might be the most engaged post on our college football account.
For sure. Definitely.
I know on Facebook, the main account had a lot of interactions as well.
Are we allowed to call people stupid?
Listen, I think if people act stupid, you can call them stupid.
Yeah.
I found
no, no,
this
Mike
conversation.
Let me start this. Sorry. Mike Craven, why did you rank SMU, Houston, UTSA with incumbent starting quarterbacks over my team that has a quarterback that has not thrown a meaningful pass, or that has a quarterback that only good game came against a team with no pass rush? Go.
I feel like this comes down to, like, people look at it and go, who's the most talented quarterback room?
Right.
Right? And that's different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you can't compare SMU playing in the ACC to A&M playing in the SEC. Like, there's
pound for pound rules.
Right. It's pound for pound rules, right? Mm-hmm. This is what we're doing. This is Dave Campbell's Texas Football. You should know the drill by now, right? Mm-hmm. SMU had a quarterback that threw for 4,000-plus yards. Houston had a quarterback that threw for 36 touchdowns and went to a conference championship game. UTSA.
No, but Mike Craven, Quinn Ewers.
And Arch Manning,
handed the ball off in a blowout against Ohio State. Why isn't he better than Tanner Mordecai in your rankings?
Well, because the last time I saw Quinn Ewers play, he was getting dominated by Todd Dodge's defense at Westlake. You know what I mean? And so, like, I guess we could bet on the come. And if you're asking me the most talented quarterback rooms, yeah, sure. Texas Hudson Card's a really talented guy. Quinn Ewers, five-star prospect. We all agree on all that kind of stuff. But I've never seen either one of them do it in a college game meaningful. Like, Hudson Card lost his job to Casey Thompson.
Yeah.
You know, A&M can't find a quarterback.
Right.
And they went to LSU and kind of got a guy that LSU didn't really want anymore, and he may be their starter and stuff. I think this is just one of those weird years where the G5 quarterback rooms are in much better positions than the P5 ones, especially if we compare them to like-to-like competition. And at the end of this year, people may be right. Texas may have the best quarterback room. Quinn Ewers could throw for 4,500 yards, 40 touchdowns, three interceptions, and it's like, hey, yeah, that's the guy we thought we'd see coming out of South Lake Carroll. But I can't, with good conscience, just do that. Just put it on the list in front of guys who we have literally seen do it at their highest level. Maybe their level isn't as high as A&M or Texas's, but we've seen them win meaningful conference games and have their teams do really good things. Texas went 5-7 last year.
Sure.
Their quarterback room is not number one in the state. I'm sorry.
Right. I remember Texas fans, if it gives you any solace, we could absolutely make an argument that they're below Tech, TCU, and A&M. Why? And Baylor. Because they have quarterback. Those teams have quarterbacks that we've seen do it.
Yes.
Donovan Smith, say what you want about him. We know he did something.
That's
right?
What's funny
Tyler
about this.
Shuck, we've seen him do something.
That's what's funny is like, I thought I rated Texas too high.
Right.
Yeah.
Max Duggan, whatever you think of Max Duggan, he has more games under his belt, meaningful snaps, than Hudson Card. And Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, Blake Shapen, like, tore up the Sugar Bowl before he got hurt.
Right.
You know, like, Baylor's got a good court. But, yeah, I Texas fans are the most sensitive people on the internet.
Oh,
like, I know they like to make Texas A&M fans the most sensitive fans on the internet. A&M fans are just the craziest fans on the internet. Texas fans are the most sensitive fans on the internet.
Oh,
it's
easily.
Not even close.
Easily.
Easy clickbait.
Oh, my God. It was great. It was great. Look, watching the engagement roll, and you're just like, man, we're
going
to drop this exact same list in like October. It's going to change, and it's going to be like, oh, why is blah, blah, blah.
What I loved is like the Davey O'Brien watch list award was like, this lines up perfectly with like what our nominations were.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I retweeted that.
Shout out watch this season, baby.
I had like my Brian Windhurst moment.
Now, why would they tweet that?
Yeah, why?
Why?
Why would they do that? You know?
No, I agree. Like, listen, this is a snapshot of what we project right now.
Entering 2022.
Honestly, and if you pick up the magazine, this is consistent with what's in the magazine. Look who's the first team quarterback. Look who's the second team quarterback. It's the guys 1 and 2 on this list.
Yeah.
Like, it's the guys that played for conference championships last year.
It's not the Ohio State transfer.
It's not the Ohio State transfer, right? So, I don't know. It's funny to me. Obviously, I know why, because Quinn Ewers is the greatest thing since sliced bread. 247 had him since whatever, Vince Young. I don't know their rankings. They're just something Vince Young, something Garrett Gilbert. I don't know. But Gilbert should be a cautionary tale that unless we see them do it, it's always speculation, right? You saw Quinn Ewers. You covered Quinn Ewers,
He's incredible.
He is absolute natural talent.
Yeah, we're not saying he's not good.
Natural talent. He might be number one just in terms of pure, natural, gifted talent.
Yeah, if we're talking about like just like scouting talent.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Sure.
So, but
Hudson Card is on top
all the
of
boxes
that list,
too.
And, you know, he couldn't beat out Casey Thompson.
I was about to say, like
so
I said,
like,
the only game he had.
Happens on the field.
The only good game Hudson Card had was against a team with no pass rush when Louisiana couldn't figure out how to get to him.
I also saw a couple comments that were like, oh, well, what about Arch Manning, too? I'm like, he's not even even signed yet.
I was about
like, he's just verbally committed
at
this point.
Don't disrespect Malik Murphy like that. Just dumping him out
of
the QB room. That's the other guy that's actually pretty physically gifted. Yeah. So, like, yeah, no, second of all, not even in the room yet.
I think we should all know after the last couple years that people can't read.
No.
Right?
No.
Not critically. Right? I mean, they can physically read words.
Right, right, right.
Like, I know what
critical thinking
is.
Was missed
they,
in
they
elementary
look
school.
Over context. They look over things like that. So, anyway, we have that was last week. We have another graphic up for this week. That's surprisingly getting a lot less engagement because a certain team is number one.
Texas is on top, so nobody's there to cry about it.
So we'll talk about the running back room next week because I do think it might be one of the better years. It might be the best year in a long time across the state in terms of just running
back
talent.
The way that we have questions about quarterbacks throughout the state,
we
have
not.
The opposite problem
for
with running
backs.
Like,
it's very clear.
Plethora of running backs. And that's with Zach Evans and Luis's Bentley leaving the state and Alton McCaskill being hurt.
But Craven, I'm surprised. Why isn't there as much of an uproar about the running backs as there are the quarterbacks?
Yeah, you put Texas and Texas A&M on top, and there seems
there's
to
no
be a
complaints
lot.
There.
Yeah, like
no
mice.
Complaints there.
Nobody's like congratulating us.
I was about to say, great rankings, right, Mike Craven. Yeah,
right. I haven't seen one good comment.
It's like being a parent.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, you know,
like, the kids just
that's
complain.
A great kid you got there.
Right. Well, and the kids never like, hey, thanks, Dad, for being in the right spot at the right time, you know?
Yeah. So, thanks for being there always. It's not till like they're in their 40s. It's like, thanks for being there when I was younger.
That was pretty cool of you to be a dad.
That's pretty cool of you to be a dad.
Anyway, so that'll do it for us. Like I said, this is a recorded show. We'll be at Conference USA Media Day all today as you're watching this. We'll be bringing you interviews, all this stuff. Craven will have a story or so after we get done. And we'll continue to keep rolling out these podcasts as we get closer to the season because, damn, it's getting really close. Like I mentioned, all the Group of Five schools, Big Ten's obviously Media Days right now. Sun Belt's going on right now as well. Conference USA, but just mentioned, we're there. It's starting to get all there. Watch lists are coming out. Mike Craven probably just made a watch list. I don't know. Everybody comes out with something every week now.
We only have 4 weekends left.
Oh,
man.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It was depressing when I got back from my last vacation.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I got nothing until like the season starts. I'm just here.
I feel like the season just ended, too.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I don't even feel like it's...
We got to get ready to just like be on the road, just talk to people until December, basically.
Till December. Wow. That's a long time.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll be back next Wednesday, hopefully live, actually live.
Yeah.
Because fingers knocking crossed on all the wood. There's hopefully nothing going on. But like I mentioned, we're here every Wednesday at 2. You can subscribe everywhere you get your podcast. You can watch anywhere you can imagine streaming. You know, we're there. TechSwivel.com. Be sure to subscribe. We got the magazine up on Archive right now, so you can actually read it online if you haven't gotten your hard copy. They're coming in stores. I swear to God, they're back. Like within the next couple of weeks, you will start to see them on the shelves because the paper situation is finally solved. If you're a subscriber, you've had the magazine, so consider that your incentive for next year. Make up for that mistake if you have not done that already. For Mike Craven, Mallory Hartley, I am Ishmael Johnson. We will talk to you guys next week. And remember, we've had 11 of the 12 FBS head coaches on this show. Jimbo Fisher, please give us a call.